Mr. Kyzeldere, in Turkey, this time there is concrete accusation of corruption. But until we find out the entire truth, it will take time. Meanwhile, there's a lot of speculation on what will happen after Erdogan. And if Gulen and Erdogan, as they say, are two faces of the same coin, and Gulen talks about democratic capitalism, education, science, and a world where Muslims are capable of working like Westerners, but still preserving their own values, what do you think his supporters believe? He has powerful supporters, among them there are businessmen and intellectuals. But do they think, to the extent that you may know, that his ideas might become applicable as a way of governance?
First of all, I would like to say something about the numbers to get it a little bit in perspective. Turkey has currently a population of about 76 million, and the Gulen movement is estimated at roughly 5 million. So even if Gulen would have, or the Gulen movement would form a political party and almost all would vote for him, then this would be still a party that is in need of coalitions. What concerns his concrete ideas for politics in Turkey is very difficult to say, because there we do not know much concrete. He has a network of schools. It is known that the graduates from that school are asked especially to apply to certain professions. But what they are supposed to do afterwards in these positions, be it in the judiciary or in the police, is not very clear. Even in the current confrontation between the Gulen movement and the AKP, and especially the person of the Prime Minister, it is not clear what they would do differently in concrete politics, and who belongs to the Gulen movement, or who is just a sympathizer, or who has maybe very little to do but is put into the same basket. So it's not very transparent, it's very intransparent, to be more concrete, and therefore it is difficult to say who actually is really part of that movement, who is a sympathizer, and who does not have anything to do with it.
It is true, however, or is it true, however, that the Turks are looking for a new identity during the last, I would say, 10 years?
I mean, what has happened in Turkey, especially after Turkey became an EU candidate in 1999, and then with the AKP, who is in power since 2002, is that there are many reforms that have completely changed the political, social, and economic life of Turkey. A very closed country up until the 80s opened up, first the economy and then the politics, be it inside the country with political democratic reforms, and be it also the outlook in its neighborhood and international relations. Whether this is a new identity, I think this was, to a great extent, this was a normalization of affairs inside Turkey and outside Turkey, but it was not as harmonic or perceived only by the AKP, that there are more rifts within the AKP and among the people who voted for the AKP. There were common interests of many different groups that supported the AKP for the first 5, 6, 7 years of their government, but there was a little bit the perception within Turkey and especially abroad that there is one Islamic movement, and they more or less they all want the same and they follow the same ideas and the same persons. But there are many different groups within that Islamic movement, and of course also outside the Islamic movement that supported the AKP. And within the past 2 to 3 years, these differences have become clearer, the AKP has become more authoritarian, and there is more opposition from several groups, be it the Gulen movement or outside the Islamic movement, the liberals who have almost completely abandoned the AKP and other groups, smaller groups that also supported the AKP. So there was a big change, especially in the first years, and there is a growing authoritarianism during the past 2-3 years, and the AKP, who has won 3 consecutive elections, now thinks that it can and it should govern and rule alone and does not need any more alliances and partners. And this is a process now of confronting and fighting against these former allies and partners.
The party does not need alliances or collaboration with other parties, even in the case where there's this scenario of having presidential democracy.
Yeah, this was the plan of the Prime Minister to change the constitution, make it more presidential, and then be elected president in 2014, where presidential elections will be held in August, but for the first time the president will be elected by the people. Before, the president was only elected inside parliament. But this has not worked out the way Erdogan wanted it, because these constitutional changes were not made. Now, there will be elections in 2014 of the president by public vote, but the president is still, by and large, representative, not very different from the president in Germany or Austria, and won't have far-reaching powers as Erdogan wished. So, at least for the time being, and since there will be national elections in 2015, at least until 2015, there will not be a major change of the constitution, and the constitution won't become any more presidential.
The current situation in Turkey, how will that affect the elections? They are a few months away. What is your take on that?
Yeah, the first elections that will be held in a row of 3 elections are the regional elections. They are scheduled for 30 March 2014, and regional elections in Turkey are held on one day nationwide for all the provinces and all the municipalities. The AKP in the last national elections almost won 50%. If elections were next week, then of course we would see a significant effect of this corruption scandal and of the demissions of 3 ministers and the change of 10 ministers and the cabinet. But it's still more than 3 months, and a lot can happen, and the AKP is the most professional party organization in Turkey. It indirectly owns or controls a large part of the media, especially of TV, which is the most important one, but also certain newspapers, and still they represent the view of the government and of the prime minister. So it is still possible that for the regional elections, if this scandal does not become bigger and does not involve people closer to Erdogan or his family and himself, that there will only be a minor change in the votes for the AKP, maybe a drop of 3-5%, which means that they will still be by far the biggest party and still win the most important cities, being Istanbul and Ankara. However, with a slight decrease in votes, some of the cities that the AKP, before that scandal became known, thought to win next year that they did not hold in until now, that maybe will not be possible because of this slight change. But so far there is not a huge change in the voter preferences. And one of the problems for this is also that the population does not see the opposition as a real alternative to the governing party. And until this does not change, the only effect that we can directly see from a loss of votes of the AKP is that the group of non-voters or people that are undecided will increase, but not directly oppositional parties.
So given the difference between the two poles of political life in Turkey nowadays, We can say that Erdogan is a person, but Gulen is a movement. If at a certain point Erdogan as a person is out of the picture for whatever reason, let's say he decides to resign, let's say that he is physically not able to perform his duties, what do you feel would be Turkey after Erdogan?
Yeah, this is, of course, one of the tricky questions, because now Erdogan is the person that holds the different wings of the AKP together. Without Erdogan, probably the party will split into its fractions and won't be as powerful as it is now, because he is the charismatic leader that appeals to many in the population. The scenario is, for the time being, not very likely, but if for health reasons or other reasons he would resign, let's say, next year or in 2 years, then I would predict that the party would divide in at least two parties, with one more progressive reformist wing and one more conservative, closer to the political movement where the party has its roots in, which is called the National View, whose leader was Necmettin Erbakan. And then this new, more progressive reformist party, that could then find a coalition with one of the mainstream center-left or center-right parties, and then have a change of politics as a consequence.
So do you think that people in Turkey believe in Turkey becoming a member of the European Union? Or do they think that Turkey not being a member of the European Union would be more powerful regarding its role in the Middle East?
Yeah. The Turkish population now is a lot more skeptic and a more negative towards the EU than 10 years ago. As we can see from surveys, that the support for EU membership dropped from around about 75 to now only 35%. But the reason for this is that during the past years there was not much progress in the accession negotiations, and there are some issues like the blocking of the chapters, or that Turks can't travel visa-free, that had a very negative impact on the population. And also, of course, the discourse within Turkey, that more and more politicians talk about alternatives, or say that the EU needs us more than Turkey needs the EU, that had an effect. And also some European politicians and their attitude towards Turkey, be it Sarkozy or be it the German government, did not help these relations. So this can also change with a change in politics, with, for example, a kind of solution on Cyprus that would immediately lead to the deblocking of aid chapters, or a change of attitude of the German or French government that would have immediately a positive effect also on Turkey. But of course, there is a debate on alternatives and looking east, and Erdogan asking Putin to become a member of the Shanghai Organization of Cooperation. But I think that through the experiences of the past 2 years with the neighboring countries and the Arab Spring, that many in Turkey saw that this is not a real alternative, and that the best anchor of foreign policy, of stability and of democratization, is closer relations with the EU. The EU has opened a new chapter only some weeks ago, after 3 years of not opening any chapter, and there has been a start to talks on visa liberalization only a week ago. So I think there is still, even if it looks difficult in this now very tense situation, there is still room for improvement in 2014 on the Turkey-EU relations. And of course, Turkey should have good relations with its neighbors and also good contacts to the Middle East, but this should not be seen as an alternative to EU membership.
And I suppose there's also the political solution within the European Union to open or to close specific chapters, even if these initiatives are not supported 100% by evidence.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is politicians can say that they are working even on closed chapters or on blocked chapters, and that progress is happening and that the bureaucracy is working and the technical process is continuing. But to have something positive to sell, you need to open the one or the other chapter at least once a year, and this has not happened for 3 years. Even if there was now the opening of one chapter and there could be still open two or three chapters, this means that after these are opened, then there's not much room to negotiate, and there should be a change of attitude on the side of France, and there should not only because of Turkey, but there should be because for the population on Cyprus, there should be a solution on Cyprus to de-block then also chapters for Turkey.
Sure, because we have to remember that for the accession of a new member, all of the negotiations are between the Commission and the already members of the European Union.
Of course.
Mr. Giselde, thank you very much for your time. We hope to have you back on our podcast. We are neighbors, and things that happen in Turkey do directly or indirectly affect the situation in Greece to a certain extent, too. So we thank you very much for your time.
I thank you, Ευχαριστώ πολύ.